College holds a mythic place in American culture. But there are stories you won't hear on the campus tours.
The higher-ups are concerned about one thing, and that is avoiding scandal.
I'm Margot Gray. On the new podcast, Campus Files, we cover everything from rigged admissions to the drama of Greek life and student protests. Listen to and follow Campus Files, an Odyssey original podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to The Connection, a weekly radio program where we share our experiences and expertise with stories of caring, courage, and change right here in Connecticut. Listen to learn about needed resources to improve your well-being and transform your life. Now, here are the hosts of The Connection, Lisa DeMattis-Lepore and Anne Baldwin.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's program. I am Anne Baldwin, as you just heard in the introduction, here with the co-host of the program, Lisa DeMattis-Lepore, also Chief Executive Officer of The Connection. God, that sounds great.
Thank you. Good morning to all of our wonderful listeners.
You know, you're one of those CEOs, right? I mean, you're one of those people that really, you don't fit the mold. I got to tell you that. I work with a lot of CEOs. But you're just so delightful and so passionate about what you do. I mean, how much is passion a part of running an organization?
I think it's huge. You have to keep it real and you have to remember really the work that's being done in the organization and the clients that we're serving. And for me, that's what brings me to work every day because I, you know, did many of the jobs that, you know, a lot of our staff hold because I've been at the organization for a really long time. And I promised myself that if I forgot what it was like to be working with clients and really how hard the work was, then I needed to do something else.
So. Well, and you're doing it. And one of the things I love about this program is, you know, each and every week we have the opportunity to talk about a different topic. And I'm so excited to have Dr. Marianne Haley. She's the Deputy Director of the Connecticut Coalition to End Homelessness, and known in the business as CCEH. And, you know, Dr. Haley, thank you so much for being on. We're talking about homelessness, and we're talking about, in a little bit, we're going to be talking to one of your colleagues, too, about homelessness and, you know, youth and young adult programs. So if you could just give us an overview of kind of what your role is and where we're at as far as homelessness goes in our state right now.
Thank you, Anne, and thanks for having me. I'm thrilled to be able to participate in this. Our role, CCEH, or the Connecticut Coalition to End Homelessness, is a statewide organization that works with many communities across the state and advocates and providers and towns and cities to end homelessness, to prevent and end homelessness is our mission. And what we have done is to really align ourselves and our partners with the federal goals to end homelessness for chronic homelessness and veteran homelessness and youth and family homelessness. And Connecticut has been an incredible leader in the country around ending homelessness, so it's been a real privilege to be a part of this.
Let me ask you, and let me ask Lisa, both of you, the question. What are some of the components? What are some of the reasons that people end up homeless in the first place? What are some of those? Are there top 10, top 5?
Well, so, you know, I would say that the reasons that people most often think about are probably part of those reasons. So if you're talking to the general public, I think that there's also some misconceptions as well that, you know, our homeless population is, you know, has more substance use or mental illness. And in fact, if you think about it, there are lots of people that are housed that have the same problems that our homeless population has. The difference is that they, you know, often do not have the resources to rely on to be able to have a home and to be stably housed.
That's so true, yes.
And so we really want to think about it in terms of, I think, the one factor that differentiates our homeless population from our other populations that are stably housed is resources, and that it is often an issue of poverty and not being able to, you know, have the resources to keep a stable place to live. And, you know, so we want to just make sure that, you know, we're not thinking about this as that they're a much different population than you or I or anybody else, because I think that people have, you know, different issues that they face and challenges in their life that they are still able to remain housed. And
I really think that's key, and we've really been talking about that a lot on this program, that there's many factors that come into play with regard to homelessness, and I think you're absolutely right. It's not necessarily always addiction or mental health, but it's, you know, other factors that we've shared on the show with regard to not having the right support system, not knowing who to turn to. And I'm sure you see what we see, which is that a lot of folks have really, you know, lost family members because of potentially struggles that they've had, and they don't have anyone to really reach out to.
You know, and you talk about the fact that family support, and I'll share a personal example of that. My daughter called me yesterday from Texas, got pulled over, expired license and registration. So, ticket, money for registration, money for insurance. You know, she's in her late 20s. She's got a job, but she's falling short. Now, if I weren't there to help her, what happens? You know, I've been in situations when I was newly married, you fall behind. I mean, you know, many times just one paycheck away from being homeless, really. I mean, it's tight out there. It's tight for people that have good jobs. It's tight for everybody. So I can't imagine, you know, how some people do it on the incomes that they do. So there are just, you know, there are so many factors. So Dr. Haley, again, we're talking with Dr. Mary Ann Haley. She's the Deputy Director of the Connecticut Coalition to End Homelessness. I got to ask you maybe a tough question, but I think it's one that our listeners, you know, might be curious about. So Connecticut's not in great financial shape right now. How many resources are going to be lost, or are there going to be enough resources still available to stay focused on, you know, some of these issues like substance abuse, like homelessness, like behavioral health, like mental illness, you know, that have gone so far, but yet may be cut due to budget constraints?
So that is a very tough question and a very important question, because what we also know about homelessness is that our work to end homelessness across the state, and this is a very, you know, collaborative state that has worked tirelessly over the last few years to become one of the leaders in the country to end homelessness. And we were very successful in being able to end, we were the first state in the country to end chronic veteran homelessness. We were one of two states to end veteran homelessness in 2015. In 2016, at the end of the year, we were able to match those chronically homeless who are individuals experiencing a severe disabling condition and a long-time homelessness with housing. And what that has meant has also been a real cost savings, because we know as people experience homelessness, they often circle through our systems like, you know, emergency rooms and criminal justice systems, mm-hmm. and that the cost of sort of maintaining that homelessness and the cost of maintaining shelters to house people for a long period of time is much more, is much higher than it is to work and to end a person's episode of homelessness.
You know, and that's one of those things, like this guy that is doing work for me, right? He's homeless. He's living in a shelter. It's pay for it now or pay for it later, correct? And I said, how long can you live there? And he said, up to a year. But this guy doesn't want to be there either. He's working his butt off and saving his money in a hiding place in his room somewhere, undisclosed, because he doesn't want to get it stolen, and keeps his food between his screen and his window to keep it cool. You know, he doesn't want, this isn't his end goal in life, but it's an opportunity for him to get back on his feet. So, you know, and I think that's a great thing about collaboration. Collaboration between organizations like CCEH, the Connection, the state. I mean, it's a team effort. You can't get out there and just do it all alone. And, you know, it's not a, you're not doing it because you want to make big bucks. You're doing it because you want to make a big difference, right?
That's very true. And I do agree that we have an extremely collaborative state, and we've really gone above and beyond working together in that collaboration to end homelessness and to really address this issue, because it's so chronic and it's one that we really, you know, need to stay on top of. Really quickly, our Supportive Housing for Families program is statewide, and we serve 500 clients per year. We have a current waiting list of over 500, and those are folks that are absolutely appropriate for this program and their families. But because of the lack of housing and wraparound services, you know, we are treating many of those on the wait list in our outpatient services, hoping that a bed opens up. But we're just, you know, saying that this is an ongoing problem. And remember, unemployment is high, people are losing their jobs, and that's really affecting families' ability to stay housed and to live in a safe environment.
Well, that really puts it in perspective. And, you know, we're going to be speaking with shortly with John Lawler. He's the Director of Homelessness for the Youth and Young Adult Programs at The Connection. But first of all, Dr. Marianne Haley, Deputy Director of the Connecticut Coalition to End Homelessness. You know, it's a continued battle, but, you know, keep up the good fight. Thank you for what you do, and thank you for adding your perspective on this program. And we're going to be talking about the next chapter shortly.
Thank you. Thank you
so much for joining us.
So, as I mentioned, that was a good overview, because it was interesting to see, and, you know, Lisa pointed out 500 right now folks are, you know, in the homelessness program, 500 on a waiting list. You know, I thought when my kid was on a waiting list in number 20 for a preschool, that was a big deal. But can you imagine being homeless, and who knows where in that number of 500 your family's safety and well-being lies? So, thank you for being on the program. Again, John Lawler is the Director of Homeless and Youth Young Adult Programs. So I'm assuming we're going to talk about, we're not just talking about families, we're talking about young people that are living out on our streets here in Connecticut.
Oh, thank you very much for having me and giving me the opportunity to speak about this very important issue that our state is facing. So we run a program that serves homeless young adults throughout the state of Connecticut. And as you're speaking about the wait list for the family program, our particular program has a wait list of just a little over 270 young people age 24 and under who are actively homeless, unstably housed, no reliable place to stay at night.
Wait a minute. 24 and under. So what's the youngest right now? What youngest homeless person out there? What's the youngest you've seen recently?
I'd say the youngest that we tend to come across might be around the 16-17 age. Under the age of 18, it's a little bit more to identify them. Probably more family members are willing to help out that young person as well. It's a bit of a protective factor against staying in the streets. Where we see the huge surge is right a bit between the ages of 18 to 24. That's the population that's primarily that 270 wait list that we have.
So as someone who doesn't work in this field, my question is, if they're younger like that, wouldn't they be in the care of the Department of Children and Families? Wouldn't they get into the foster care program? And that's where we're talking about a continuum of care, right? Mm-hmm. So you can go from homelessness to maybe you've got a foster family out there or a foster individual that can, that is ready and willing to take this individual. So, you know, is that what we're talking about?
Yeah, that's absolutely true. There's other resources in place if you're homeless, don't have a reliable place to stay, if you're under the age of 18, with the Department of Children and Families being one of them, the ability to assist through foster care, other options for them. Those are the options that we don't see with when someone turns 18. That kind of fabricated legal age of adulthood strips away a lot of protections, yet just from the brain development perspective, there's very little difference between an 18 and 17 year old. They're still equally as vulnerable.
Yeah, that's very true. And I've had this amazing opportunity to work with John, who's really an amazing role model and director of the youth program, and meet many of the clients that are being served right now, our young adults. And their stories are just stunning. And the level of need that they have is really high, but the success rate that I've seen, you know, with John and the work that he and his staff have done have been really stunning to me, and I'm really grateful to, you know, have John on board and really working on, you know, tackling this huge issue that we're having in our state.
What is for you, John? What qualifies as success?
For us, success is being able to get linked with some type of permanency so that they, A, won't experience homelessness again, but also not show up in the other very costly systems, criminal justice systems, child welfare systems, other systems that are there. I think as you referenced earlier, it's kind of pay for it now, pay for it later. Mm-hmm. Age-wise, this is the perfect time to pay for them because there's just a lot of development and an ability to change at this age. That we've seen. So we're able to make very large successes in relatively short periods of time. Our particular program, none of those options will permanently help a young person. They're pretty time limited. But that's what we found is really all it takes. Some guidance and support and assistance for a pretty time-bound period. And they're able to get on their feet and independent.
And excuse me, also, the fact that for example, this program that John's talking about, The Connection, offers that stability and really an assigned case manager who's working closely with the family to provide and assist with the wraparound services that are greatly needed to really maneuver through everyday life. And, working with these adults on addressing all their needs, I think is really critical because it's really more than housing. I think that's important for our listeners to hear. Housing is key, obviously. I think a lot of us take it for granted. When you put a key in the door and you turn that key, I want everyone to picture that in their mind right now. What's that for you? It's your safety net, right? It's your place where you shut the door and you feel like this is your home. This defines who you are. You feel safe. And that's what we're trying to provide. But in addition to that, again, it's those wraparound services that folks need, especially at that young age, to maneuver life and systems and manage budgets and how do you deal with your employer and how do you get a job and sort of how do you do all of that? Get through school, finish college, get your support or, a trade school. And that's really what the program offers, everyday living and dealing with every single possible life issue that there is.
Well, and that's it, right, John? Because a lot of these young people probably haven't had that role model to teach life skills, survival skills.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. I mean, one of the huge contributors to their level of homelessness is that they don't have any adult supports willing to take them on, to take them in. They don't have that resource. Or if they do, they're just incredibly unhealthy relationships where they might do more damage than good. So a huge gap that our program is able to fill through its services is that role of not only through case management, but also of a role model of someone to be able to hold your hand and walk you through some of those early life experiences, especially when you're just starting to test the waters on your own.
Right. And it just breaks my heart because, even my son, after he graduated from college, I called him my cellar dweller. he came back and lived in the basement for 2 years because his good job out of college was right down the road. Save the money. You've got my support. Let's do this. How sad, that these kids are not only don't have that option, but they're out there who knows where on the streets and, encountering who knows what. Mm-hmm. And that could lead to another issue of drug addiction or trauma or those kinds of things, male or female. Mm-hmm. So without breaking confidentiality, and you talked about you've heard some of the stories, Lisa.
I have one that is poignant in my mind.
Can you please share that with us?
And this might have been prior to maybe John moving into this role, but I remember that we had a brother and sister who were probably a year apart from each other, whose parents were really struggling both with addiction and mental health. And they were both spiraling out and family lived out of state. And, the kids would come home and there wouldn't be food in the refrigerator. They didn't know where the parents were. The parents were, constantly arguing. And it was really difficult for them to stay in the house. They couldn't. It was just too difficult to focus on studies and really to get through life. And so we had a brother and sister duo that, were referred into the program and we were able, they live separately, but we were able to help them and, support them through school and, really get stabilized. And I think that, again, that's another example of, that family environment in that situation that was unhealthy for these two young adults to live there. And they had been what we say couch surfing, right, John? Mm-hmm. And so sort of staying at their friends, living at different friends' house. And it was actually a family friend that called and reached out to us to say, look, we've got this 18-year-old living with us, and she's a good friend of our daughter's, and we love her, and we think she's amazing, and we're happy to have her here. However, what's the future of this, you know, young adult? What's going to happen to her? And so we're reaching out to see what you can do, you know, to help her. But she had been living on and off there for a very long, maybe it's for 2 years. And there's so many listeners out there who I'm sure have their friends' kids sleeping at their house right now.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, and that's a good opportunity too, Lisa, to share the information, because as you just, you know, explained, it was a friend or a family member of the friend that called the connection and said, is there anything you can do? It's not that they didn't want the responsibility, because they obviously took it on for 2 years, but other resources, so that you know that just sleeping on my couch isn't a temporary fix. There's other things that these kids need. So, John, what is the number that people can call if they're interested in programs or they know of an issue out there in their community or in their backyard?
Sure. The best number to contact would be 860-878-4042. That's our standard outreach and referral line.
Okay. And you said there's a backup right now, or what do you need? People out there listening to this, you know, we break their hearts. You know, it makes us sad. Mm-hmm. And I listen to programs like this and I say to myself, you know, what can I do? What can people out there listening do? Anything?
Yeah, there's quite a bit that they can do. I mean, one of the big needs is to have some adult supports involved with these young people to help guide them. And sometimes that can just be someone that they call at the end of the day or their first day of work. I mean, pretty normal youth behavior supports that they just don't have outside of our case management support. And certainly we are constantly on the lookout for things like unpaid internships, things that will actually put them in a professional environment, get them some experience that can translate down the road for them. So these are all examples, along with opening your home to someone who might be, kind of unstably housed or homeless. These are all opportunities that community members can absolutely take advantage of.
So, John, I'd like to ask you a question that I'm assuming that many of our listeners have, but I know I have this question, and that is, what are some of the trends that you're seeing with homeless youth with regard to issues that they're facing? I mean, obviously it's homelessness, but what are some generic situations that you can share for our listeners today about, you know, what these young adults are facing?
And probably speaks pretty heavily to the differences between what a homeless young person, their homeless experiences versus an older individual. So one of the reasons that a lot of people in Connecticut don't even understand that there is this homeless young adult problem in the state is because it's just a much less visible problem. These are not individuals who are staying out on the street for weeks at a time. The pattern that we see are primarily couch surfers with a lot of transitions, a lot of different places that they might stay, some of which can be extraordinarily high risk. They tend not to enter shelter, and they also have these brief intermittent periods of staying in a street, abandoned building, stairwell. And so they struggle with things that anyone with that number of transitions would struggle with. Difficulty staying connected to education, difficulty being able to function in school, learn math, learn history, those kind of things when you're not sleeping well, you have to spend a huge amount of your day figuring out where you're going to sleep that night. Employment opportunities are few and far between. Very difficult to hold down a job for a young person in that scenario as well. And also just getting connected to resources that are out there to help them. One of the things that we constantly hear from our youth just coming into our program is that the goal when you're a homeless and unstably housed young person is not to appear homeless or unstably housed.
Right, right.
You put a huge target on your back for all sorts of very dangerous things. And there's also a lot of young people out there who are in those situations that don't consider themselves homeless. Come across a few people over just the past couple months where they stayed a couple nights on the street, but they don't consider themselves homeless. They just did that for a few nights, but normally they're still just kind of a normal kid, you know, hopping around different people's places. So a lot of the barriers that they face are certainly a disconnect from some available resources, but just lack of opportunity to have a place to call home, to get stabilized. And then there's that whole mentorship, the services piece, which is crucial, just so they can start to emerge into adulthood.
Right. So there are things you can do. You can mentor some of these young people. You can get involved. You can be that phone peer-to-peer support. Mm-hmm. You know, even another young person, I would think that, you know, what greater example of somebody that's kind of, you know, on a different track or has different options than some of these kids do to have somebody else to kind of guide them along the way. If you're tuning in just now, we're speaking with John Lawler. He's the Director of Homeless Youth and Young Adult Programs at The Connection. And, of course, we've got Lisa DeMattis Lepore here as well, my co-host. And the phone number, again, I want to give out if people want information on your program or they want to talk to someone specifically and directly is 860-878-4042. That's 860-878-4042. And you talked about, you know, pay for it now or pay for it later. You know, for some of these young people, do they not turn to crime and end up incarcerated where they know they've got a roof over their head? Not necessarily a soft, cozy bed or a pillow, but, you know, meals and you know, what would you rather have? I mean, that's where they end up if they don't get the support they need, correct?
Absolutely.
So, John, can you share just sort of a brief story about, without obviously breaching confidentiality, but perhaps a story about one of our youths that you have found really poignant?
Yeah, and maybe that's made it, right? That's gone through the system, and mm-hmm. today, you know, what happened and where are they now?
Sure. So, I mean, there's always one that comes out to my mind, which is a young woman who came to us right around the age of 19 years old, I say. She was previously involved in the foster care system, had a number of placements, never really, just was never able to get adopted, had a lot of behavioral health issues. And when we came across her, she was living in a hotel in what was likely a rather exploitive situation. And so we were able to bring her into our program. She was able to get her own apartment through our financial assistance. A lot of work with her around how to develop healthy relationships, how to do employment seeking, money management, etc. And this is a girl who really struggled even getting through high school. So this was taking on a lot for her, that level of independence at that time. 2 years later, this young woman discharges from us to her own apartment, can afford it without a problem. She's actively involved in school to get a certificate for a nursing career. And just someone who really flourished with just some of the supports that we were able to provide and some mentorship, and just someone there to be able to help her work through you know, the adjustment to being on your own, and also to work through some of the trauma that she had been through as well.
Mm-hmm. So, and these people, I would assume, when that's a great success story, maybe even come back and give back.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We are still in touch with her very frequently.
That's great. Those are the kinds of stories. So, you know, there is hope. It's not like you're throwing money or resources at something that's not working.
Absolutely.
That's the key. So, you know, you can't ignore it. It's out there. We've got so many issues in our society, but these are issues that can be fixed.
And, you know, I remember recently John attended one of our board meetings and brought one of the youth clients. And one of the things, John, that I really felt was compelling was the relationship that had been established by one of John's staff, who was really her case manager. And that I completely remember that the client said that for the first time, they actually felt like someone really cared about them and really got to know them and, you know, didn't abandon them, didn't let them down, and really assisted them in finding a better way in their life. And I think that's so key. It's about relationships.
It is. And you know what I love? I love it when we end this program on a positive note, because it shows that there's hope. Right? There's hope. There's hope for the future. There's hope for people out there that need it, and help for people that need it. So again, the number, if you're interested in the programs at The Connection that they have to offer, 860-878-4042. And thank you for listening to another edition of The Connection right here on WTIC News Talk 1080.
Once and another.